It's the Two Smokes Podcast with your hosts, Thundersnow and the Wiggle Rat.
Hit me.
Hi, welcome back to the Two Smokes Podcast. I am the Wiggle Rat, and across from me is Thundersnow. And we are continuing, and this is probably going to be our last episode on epistemology, and it will be our last episode for the season. So what we want to kind of do is we wanted to kind of take a step back and show you, you know, now that we've trained you up in all this vocabulary and all this other stuff, we wanted to look at some of the other ways that you can use epistemology, right? Because we started with the vocabulary, then we took these specific worked examples, but they were always examples that were kind of powered by data, facts we could look up, you know,
right.
like I said, when we did the
the religion, the charitable one,
yeah,
we
exactly.
Did the whole what was the other one we did where we had a bunch of data?
Oh, I have no idea. I've slept since then.
I don't remember. There were a few.
Yeah. Well, now we wanted to take a more ephemeral concept, a more meta concept. And we wanted to try to get a handle on how do you know that you feel the way you do? Who knows better than you what you're feeling? Because we live in a time where, you know, we'll actually go places and we have people, you normally call therapists, that go, no, this is how you're feeling.
Right.
You know, we have friends that counsel us and give us the advice. Well, you know, maybe it's blah, 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 blah.
Well, I couldn't help but notice that you've kind of been a little lackadaisical lately, and I'm wondering if perhaps you might need some medication.
Yeah, things like that. And the problem there is that you begin to kind of catch yourself in this weird position where you should know you better than anybody. Right? That seems reasonable.
Right.
I'm piloting this meat machine.
Yeah, you're inside it. You are literally the only person that knows how you're feeling.
And yet, there's a rather large economic cottage industry designed to tell you how you feel and what the fuck you should do about it.
Well, I mean, that's the whole concept, right? The whole way we market everything, whether it be products, whether it be ideas, whether it be anything, is we have to have a receptive base.
Right.
And we don't want to sell to just the people that are already in that space. We want to sell to everybody. So we can try to create 37 products to meet everybody's needs, or we can try to form everybody into one demographic.
Right.
And it's a lot easier to do the one demographic thing than it is to come up with a bunch of different products.
Absolutely. The trick is invent one widget and sell it to a shitload of people.
Exactly. Exactly. And even if they don't think they need the widget, they just haven't been educated yet.
Exactly, yeah.
We will explain to you in great detail why you need this widget.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, if you think about it, the perfect example is pharmaceutical commercials.
Right.
Which I want to say were illegal until, what, the mid-90s to late 90s?
Yes, they were, and for damn good reason.
And what we've seen now is we've seen a bunch of people. I mean, you've got to throw, like, the WebMDs and right. The internet under the bus a little bit for this, right? Because the ability to look up your symptoms in Google.
Remember, when we were kids, doctors and lawyers could not advertise on TV.
Right, right. And you might see like a commercial for like Pepto-Bismol.
Oh, yeah. No. You can, for OTC shit like that, over the counter? Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but you would never see, hey, you know, do you have the herps? We got you covered. You know, are you feeling a little not so fresh? Oh, no, wait, we had the not so fresh thing. But, you know, but now you've got the you know, oh, well, that guy looks sad. Well, wait, you know, I think I might be sad.
We see commercials for cancer centers, right?
Right.
How many MD Anderson commercials have you seen?
Yeah, exactly. Or that guy has to pee all the time, but then he took this pill, and now he's whitewater rafting, and I've always wanted to whitewater raft.
Yeah. I still look back on that and think that was really, really a crushing mistake to allow that kind of adverts on television.
Oh, without a doubt. Although I still want to set up a roadside attraction right up near like one of the old highways, one of the old Texas highways.
Yeah.
And where it's basically just a field, you know, a field of flowers and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to set up a bunch of pairings of claw-footed bathtubs. Where couples can stop when they're on road trips and they can each get in a bathtub and we can have a picture done.
With the Cialis?
Yeah. Exactly. I think that would sell like hotcakes. We'd be in all those weird roadside attraction guides. hey, before you go to the Cadillac Ranch, why don't you stop by the bathtub farm? Have your picture took.
Because nothing says I'm getting ready to go fuck this person than being in a picture of the both of you.
Fully clothed in bathtubs in the outside. And everyone would know exactly what that picture meant. That there's no doubt about it. That's an indelibly stamped image on people's brains.
Well, so the way we wanted to kind of help you track, you know, actually how you're feeling and who knows better about how you're feeling, you or someone else, because one of the things we've seen from this pandemic is, you know, we've also seen people with a lot of emotional issues showing up.
Right.
Remember, you know, you have to, like, zoom in to see your shrink now or something like that, and you've been locked in your house for, what, 10 months, 11 months now, this thing?
Yeah, 11 okay, months.
So, yeah, and so you're stuck there, right? And as it turns out, isolating people like that for that length of time away from each other has certain psychological effects.
Well, and pulling yourself out of a well-worn pattern is going to knock you on your ass. You know, you might go through phases where, holy man, you know what? I had an hour commute both ways, and now all of a sudden I got so much time. I hate to say it, but this pandemic, I'm kind of grooving on this. And then, you know, a couple more months go by.
And you're like, wow, I miss people.
Yeah. It's like, I don't remember where I used to work. I had this epiphany this morning. Someone asked, you know, hey, if we go back to the office, you know, what do you think? And I was like, we had just moved into a new building in February. And I'm like, I don't remember what floor I was on. And they all look the same. So, like, I have a locker. I've got my own personal stuff in it. I don't know where it's at. So, you know, it'll throw you on the side. And if you already had concerns, right? Whether they were feelings that you were having or whether they were feelings like you felt like you should be having because someone had suggested that perhaps that described you.
Right.
Being alone with those thoughts isn't always the healthiest thing, right?
Well, and for some people it is, for some people it isn't. Psychology is not in my wheelhouse, right?
Right. Well, but I mean, at the end of the day, the thing that greases the wheels for most people is the fact that they have got a firmly entrenched pattern. And that pattern brings some security and some normalcy to their day-to-day.
There's always a new normal, right? And people will find that. Once they, you know, were pulled out of their offices and forced to stay locked up, and, you know, even the people who didn't have jobs where they could revert, you know, where they could work from home.
Right.
Those people still found a way to get by. You know, those people, for example, the way we would get together, you know, the pub folk would get together at somebody's house and hang out and drink.
Right, right.
I mean,
they closed our bar. What are we going to do? Well, shit, it turns out we can drink anywhere.
And dude, the Colombian was very accommodating.
See, if I'd have been the bartender, I'd have been like, hey, you can all come to my house, and I will sell you drinks in my backyard.
Whereas the Colombian dude, he had a swimming pool in his backyard, he had a pool table in his backyard, big ass fucking 60-inch TV with a PlayStation 4 attached to it and all that other shit. So what did we do? We went to his house, we drank, and we played YouTube videos for music.
And now you ask yourself why you're back at the pub.
No. We know why we're back at the pub.
But no, I mean, certainly people can adjust to new normal.
Yeah.
But, you know, for lots of people, they rely on that pattern, and when they're knocked off those rails, it can take them a good while.
Oh, yeah. I, to be honest with you, I'm no different. The first, 6 months of the lockdown, I was like, sweet, this is badass.
I don't have to go out. I don't have to be around people. I don't have to interact with folks.
I push the fucking Uber Eats button. Shit shows up on my door. This is fucking awesome.
In the very beginning of the pandemic, they would just leave it on the door and leave. They'd knock and leave. You didn't even have to, like, socialize with the guy that's dropping it off. You just open the door and there it is, like magic.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, yell to him as he's walking down the sidewalk. Appreciate you, bro. Keep up the good work. You're essential.
No, I was so bad, I would literally stand out front, out on my patio. Like, right here.
Napkin tucked into the shirt, fork and knife in hand. Hey, bro. Hey, I just want to let you know, you're essential.
You're essential.
But hey, in 10 months, we're all going to be arguing that you don't deserve $15 an hour. It's a fickle life. It's a fickle, fickle life.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it sure is. But what we wanted to do, you know, while we discuss about, you know, whether or not you're actually feeling the way that you do and whether or not those feelings are justified, we wanted to go ahead and take happiness as an example, right?
Well, that makes me wonder, Rat, what is happiness?
I'm so glad you asked. So no, you have to look, you know, to know what you know about something, the epistemology of something, it helps. And metaphysics and epistemology are often considered Siamese twins in this regard. You have to understand the metaphysics of something. What is it? What is happiness? And we went back and we actually did a very, very brief amount of...
very, very brief.
A very, very brief amount of research on this.
Pretty sure that ink is still wet.
Yes, it is. It is dry erase. Right. No, so whenever we go down, whenever we go back to Aristotle and Plato, what we find, you know, in the ancient Greeks and their definitions of happiness, we see that, you know, they say that, no. The virtues are what will make you happy. If you live a virtuous life, if you exhibit self-control, you will be happy. That Aristotle did that whole ring thing where, you know, he hypothesized a ring that would make you invisible. You know, would that make you a complete bastard? Or would you have the self-control to say no?
Right. Would you do the whole Kevin Bacon thing and sneak into Elizabeth Shue's shower?
Dude, I'd so totally be in Elizabeth Shue's shower. And for the record, I'd murder Gollum, too. How about that?
Yeah. I think that's. I think most people would. Yeah, Sam had the right idea the whole time.
Kill that motherfucker.
He mistrusts us.
But no, that idea that adhering to a set of virtues will make you happy, right? And that if you just do that, you know, whatever. For example, I think Plato actually cites out specifically the idea that justice is a virtue you should always aspire to, and if you do that, that will make you happy.
What do you want for breakfast?
Justice.
Justice. With a side of spaghetti.
But that isn't really the only thing the Greeks come up with, right? They also come up with this concept of cynicism, right? Where the absence of emotions is what will bring you peace, and that peace is kind of, by definition, happiness.
See, that's my jam. Fuck it all.
Well...
Fuck it all. That's my jam.
And again, it follows us. Again, you can see these if you just go ahead and take like a beginner's philosophy course. You'll see these same notions show up repeatedly over time. We're just going back as far as we can and trying to hit the first kernels of when that happened. But you can track that whole absence of emotions and peace. You can track that up through stoicism, nihilism, whatever you want. I mean, if you're just looking for terms, put it in the Google box, right?
Right.
But the point is that that absence of emotions, the only true happiness is having no feelings, because then you're never pissed off. You're totally
if you mellow. Don't have emotions, your emotions can't be fucked with, and they can't fuck with you.
There you go. And the best example that always comes to mind with this is Spock, right?
Yeah, but again, for me that falls flat because it relies on the idea that happiness is empty.
Embrace emptiness.
Exactly, right? That just seems a little off to me.
Well, I know the true happiness is Zoltan.
Zoltan!
Zoltan! But then there's...
My happiness is oral pleasures. How about this? You give me the oral pleasures, then the rat will give you the book, and if there's time later, you can give him oral pleasures. Dude, this just for the record, ending the season on the low point of quoting Dude, Where's My Car? That may be a new low even for us.
It's certainly a new low for you. No, all kidding aside, I find that movie to be ridiculously funny. That is the fucking bottom-wittest thing about me, is that I think that movie is fucking hysterical. So, Serenicism, I know I'm not pronouncing that right.
Serenium.
But again, what its angle is the absence of pain will make you happy.
Right.
Right? As long as you're not hungry, as long as somebody's not punching you in the face, as long as there's not like a bear chewing on your leg, you're going to be okay, as long as you don't have a broken heart, as long as you're not as long as you're not feeling any kind of emotional anguish. Okay, once you get rid of all that, regardless of anything else you feel, you're happy. That should be where you draw that line.
Proving even way back then, no one could understand the concept of a graduated scale. Right? No. The middle is if you don't feel any pain, if you don't have any wants, if all of your basic needs are met, you are exceptional. No. If you have none of those things, you are average.
Well, so it depends on where you like draw the line for that average, because there are plenty of people tell you that life is pain. It starts with pain and ends with pain, and everything in the middle, pretty much pain.
It's pain, bro, all the way down.
Life is pain. Anyone who tells you anything different is trying to sell you something. So it's
well, and everybody's trying to sell you something, so it holds.
Yeah, there you go. But no, so what this really is this is kind of an extension of cynicism. Right, where it's the absence of emotions. Well, here, this is pain. Physical pain isn't exactly an emotion. So this goes ahead and broadens that to go ahead and include it, right? Okay, so then we fast forward to the Romans, right? And what we have is...
the lions and the gladiators.
Sure, fuck.
Happiness is watching a bunch of heathens get eaten by lions.
So you have this guy named Sexty who says, no, if you want to be happy, you got to do this. You got to be vegan. You got to spend a little time each day in self-reflection, right? And you got to avoid consumerism and politics.
Well, that puts Americans straight out.
Yeah, which America has obviously never heard who that guy is. It's Sexty with two eyes, Sexti. But it's
dude, that would totally be my rap name.
Okay, I'll go with that. But. What's weird is that this guy has these rather sort of specific things that you have to do.
Right.
That's sort of curious, right? No. You want to be happy? Like
strangely enough, they were things that he was into, I'm certain.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and
this makes me happy, therefore.
You should give it a shot.
Right.
It made me happy. Maybe it'd make you happy, too. You know what? Maybe I like a cheeseburger or a falafel or whatever it is they eat in ancient Rome.
It's interesting to know that all the way back then, they referred to masturbation as self-reflection. You have a little tofu, you get outside, get a little vitamin D, then you go and play with the D, and you're a well-rounded individual.
It makes my toga jump. So then we have Boethius, and Boethius is really one of the earliest examples of this idea where he says, well, you know, if you're going to be happy, though, you got to find some way to get close to God, because we always mention God after masturbation because
always.
We don't want you to feel ashamed.
Oh, well, dude, hey, all forms of masturbation are recognized here at the Two Smokes Podcast.
Are they?
Whether it's actual masturbation or mental masturbation in the form of religion.
Okay. Dialing the rotary phone for Jesus. So, but no, Boethius is one of the ones that says, no, if you want to be happy...
Be godlike. Make yourself in his image.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or more importantly, he begins to struggle with this idea of, you know, it's really kind of like the very, very early forms of what would Jesus do. You can't be godlike. You don't have that kind of power to wield. But you can try to be the things that you think God wants you to be.
You can try to be closer to God.
Well, and yeah. And
after you masturbate.
I'm sorry, God, we need to see other people for about 15 minutes.
Skeet, 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 amen.
Skeet, skeet, skeet.
Dude, you have to remember, I still have 3 more episodes worth of dick and fart jokes to get through. I got to cram them all in tonight.
Okay, fuck it, we'll go with that. And then we go on to the Middle Ages, and one of the ones I really want to hit here is there's a Middle Eastern guy. No, I don't know where he's from. But his name's Al-Ghazali, right? He said, no, the only true happiness is knowledge. The only way that you're ever going to find any kind of happiness is to satisfy your own curiosity. And you never really fully do it, but the more that you gain, the more that you know, the better you're going to feel about you, the more of a master of your world you're going to feel like.
Right.
So study, take your time, understand things, look at things, observe things.
Become master of your own domain. Come on, dude, you got one left. I'm considering this a challenge. I'm going to get one on every single one.
I can't believe I just got a Seinfeld reference.
A Seinfeld masturbation reference.
Now, as we get to the early modern time, right, we see guys like Michel de Montaigne that says private hedonism is really what you need to do. Everybody's choice of happiness is going to be a little bit different.
Right.
Right. And this is where we start to see individuality actually kind of come into direct conflict with happiness, and where we start to see people go, you know, what makes me happy is not going to make you happy.
Yeah, I'm going to get mine.
Exactly. So I'm going to let you get yours, but I got to get mine.
Right.
And generally speaking, we adopt that to a certain extent and then dismiss it to a certain extent in the modern age. I mean, don't do that.
And then Kant and some of them come along and go, you know what? I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get mine even better if I know you don't get yours. The thing that makes me get mine is knowing that I've deprived you of yours.
Or the thing that makes me get mine is knowing you hate it when I do.
Oh, watch this.
You can shout that goat doesn't love you at me all day and all night, and you will not break my stride.
This goat's still getting it done.
Goat's still getting it done. And it ain't bad.
Except for when he asks if I'm his daddy.
There's no joke too cheap for the show, folks.
Not at all. We have only begun to scrape the bottom.
And then we get on to Bentham, right? Where Bentham begins this idea of utilitarianism, right? And again, this is very early. There were other proponents of utilitarianism.
Straight up Boy Scout bullshit.
Well, no. Now wait. The idea of utilitarianism is that the thing that you should do, the thing that's going to make you happiness, is elevating the happiness that's abundant in the
be
world.
Be of service to others.
Well, and that's kind of the problem, is that utilitarianism carries with it a certain flavor, a certain stink of altruism.
It's goddamn socialism. Straight up commie pinko bullshit. The only way to get something is to give something.
Well, and I don't even really know that that's the case, but this guy makes the case that if you go around making the world as happy as you can, wherever you go, at the end of the day, you'll be happy.
You can't help but be happy.
You can't help it. Look at all the people you
made. It's all the Hallmark pay it forward bullshit.
Stop watching the Hallmark channel. Valerie Bertinelli is not that fine.
Dude, some of us still have a wife at the house. And by the way, they've retired Valerie Bertinelli. There's a whole new slate of failed B-list actresses that are in their 20s and 30s now.
Oh, so Jessica Alba's on the Hallmark Channel now?
No, I don't even know if Jessica Alba's doing anything other than selling her fucking natural products or whatever. But
oh, okay. Because, sure, we need more people doing goop-like things.
Oh, dude, 30-second sidetrack. You saw the whole fucking Gwyneth Paltrow's candle?
Oh, this candle smells like my vagina.
And then it blew up?
Dude, I look, folks, if you're listening to this podcast and you ever have the urge to go ahead and buy a candle that's literally titled, "This Candle Smells Like My Vagina," because it smells like Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina, just go ahead and, for those of you in the South, just go ahead and drive up to I-10 and take a left until you get to Houston. And then just call me from there. I will drive.
We'll come to you to slap the
and slap the fucking dog shit out of you.
Taste right out your mouth.
Because that is phenomenally stupid. And the fact that that candle exploded and burned that person's home down, that's...
it's just proof that that pussy's the bomb, yo.
Why would you do that?
Dude, I'm practicing what's-his-name-ism. I'm getting mine.
Your own private hedonism. You know what gets me off? Putting cherry bombs in vagina-scented candles. All right, dude. Go ahead.
Hey, whatever, Kate.
Montaigne says it's okay. Montaigne says it's okay.
Hey, if it makes you happy, then it makes me happy. If we're all happy,
then nobody can be sad. Well, so, and that's kind of this general sort of painting of it, right? Like I said, there are other, there are other philosophers, people who take up these ideas later and kind of refine them and steer them and blah, 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 blah. And that's all well and good. But what it really kind of coalesces down to in the modern era is that we've really only got about four different ways to be happy. right? And one of those is happiness is hedonism.
Fucking A right, Bubba.
Well, and in the modern times, right, you're going to see people who actually strongly advocate for this. For example, libertarians. There should be no law that tells me I can't do anything.
Yeah, go out and do it. Here's the thing. The way they like to preface it is, if it doesn't hurt anybody else, why shouldn't you? The problem is that the natural, if we follow hedonism all the way down the rabbit hole, you can't stop at things that other people may not like, because I am the center of the universe, and whatever tickles me is what needs to happen for me to be happy. So line up, do what you got to do, and other people are going to suffer.
The whole of the law is do what thou will, right?
Goddamn right. Wild, wild west.
So you can go out and do anything you want, and I pick on the libertarians a little bit, but no, this is actually fundamentally at its core, taken to a logical conclusion, this must be anarchy. Because if any laws are bad laws, because they inhibit me from being happy, you know, and indulging myself in drugs or sex or food or whatever my thing is, hacking, for example.
Your thing is hacking?
Well, no, but somebody's thing is.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, dude, I've seen you code.
Have you? Have you really?
Oh, I've seen you code.
I get so much coding done just with Control C, Control
D. Dude, you have only one monitor and a frigging keyboard that's not mechanical. You're not a hacker.
No, I'm definitely not. Just let me write my code and go home. But the point is that there are people who will tell you that living this life of hedonism, especially people who live these lives of sexual hedonism, will tell you, no. This is good for me.
And for some of them, they may feel that it is. They may get everything that they're looking for out of it. For a lot of people, it's a good mask, right? It's I'm going to take some things that are really fun to do, and I'm going to lay them over the top of the fact that I feel a little bit empty inside.
Right.
Not to say that people that practice any kind of sexual kink are empty inside by definition. I would argue that the majority of us have moments where we feel empty inside.
Okay, we'll go with that. But again, this can apply to anything. This can apply to, for example, the drug scene.
Right. Well, it always has this Bacchanalian kind of connotation. When you hear hedonism, you associate it with kinky sex and swingers and things like that.
Again, it need not be this.
But yeah, gluttonism is hedonism.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? Quitting your job so you can garden full time, not farm, garden,
right,
is also kind of a form of hedonism.
Well, certainly,
do that only really serve you.
Taking your charitable stuff to no end is it. You can be hedonistic about anything.
Exactly. Taken to its logical extreme, you sure can. But as far as doing your charitable shit, one of the other ways that we get in the modern world, and way number two out of four, is that happiness is a virtue, right? Remember, you know, that starts with Plato and Aristotle. And this idea that if you are virtuous enough, if you are on the right side of history, if you are, you know, just the best you can be, if you're good in your community, as they say, right? If you are if you adhere strictly to your religious beliefs, right, whatever those may be, if you're living this life of virtue, it will make you happy.
And I would argue, the only argument that I would put to that is the virtues have to be your virtues. Adopting somebody's framework and then saying, okay, well, if I get to the end of this, if I make it all the way through this framework, I'm going to pop out the other end a happy dude. That's the problem. It's perfectly fine to have virtues and say, okay, these are the things that I believe in, these are my principles, these are my blah, blah, blah. Great. But then subscribing to somebody else's dogma and saying, okay, well, unless I satisfy all of these tenets, I cannot be virtuous.
Well,
that's where my problem lies. I would argue that that is hedonistic.
And you know what? I am not in a position to actually debate that argument. Wallowing in your virtue is a hedonism all of its own, and it's a weird one.
Roger that.
And yet you see it on social media every day.
Oh, yeah. During the pandemic, I was exposed to the term doom scroll for the first time. And it's not said as a pejorative. it's said with that, just that total wallowing of, oh, look at doom, doom.
Yeah.
Give me more, give me more. And it's like, oh, you masochistic bastards.
But again, if that's what you're into.
And again, everybody's got their thing.
There are 39 new strains of COVID. Each one of them is going to murder your grandmother. Yeah, knock it off.
And I know for a fact that this guy was in Berlin 3 weeks ago, and it tracked over here. Yo, shut up.
Yeah. Happiness is peace is way number three, right? And what we see is we see this show up in, for example, modern Buddhists,
right?
The people who tell you, no, it's your desire for permanence. If Buddha says you got to let that shit go.
Exactly. The whole threefold path and eightfold way and rainbow whatever. And I mean, the thing is there are a lot of tenets of some of the sects of Buddhism that I completely get. I'm like, okay, yes, you know what? I want to live my life this way. It's beyond me. I aspire to it. I would love to be able to let that shit go.
Right.
But, yeah, just not quite there yet.
Well, again.
Maybe someday.
Ask your doctor if Buddhism is right for you. But if it's not.
Exactly. Oh, but if it's not, guess what? There's more.
We got white guy Buddhism. We got nihilism.
Say what you will. At least it's in it.
Get you a fucking nine-toed girlfriend?
Give us the money, Lebowski.
But no, this idea that just finding peace, regardless of how you find peace, whether you determine that to be the absence of pain, or you know, you determine that to be just a complete detachment from anything that holds you to this world, whether it's personal relationships or material goods or whatever.
Right. What is it that Patton Oswalt says? Feeling like you have defeated all your enemies and knowing that your legacy is secure, right? being in just that perfect balance.
Well, see, and that's the deal. Remember, Buddhism is going to tell you, don't bother with a legacy anyway. You shouldn't have enemies in the first place. Just walk through the earth, just walk to earth, as fucking mellow as you can be.
Just go walk to earth for a while. You know, like Cain.
And there is a lot to be said for that. Don't misunderstand. I'm not advocating it as a religious or philosophical choice, but there is a great, for example, I'm not a particularly material guy. I own like maybe five or ten things that I can say that I'm actually emotionally attached to. Right? And the rest of it, it can come, go. I don't give a shit.
It's a strange argument coming out of a guy with two antennas in his house.
Well, yeah, I got one of the things I'm attached to is television. And not paying for cable.
Only son of a bitch still trying to get UHF on his goddamn LED.
And, of course, the last one we see come from Al Ghazali that says that happiness is knowledge. Happiness is knowledge, right? Because science is wonderful, right? And what you lose in wonder, you gain in awe, right? You will never have your curiosity fully satisfied. You will never know anything. This will keep you occupied for your whole life. And the more you learn, you will feel happy about yourself. Go do this.
I'm sure it works for people. I'm sure there are people that are more than content. I mean, we know we've got lifelong, you know, folks that walk into college and never walk out.
Yeah. Dude, that could be me.
There, but for the checkbook, go on.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and more importantly, if happiness is knowledge, then you could make an argument, and I've actually tried to make this argument a few times, that the only true love is understanding, right? This idea that you cannot love someone without making a serious attempt to try to understand them, try to empathize with them, try to get inside their head, right? Because empathy is really just emotional understanding. But knowing who they are, how they work, what their ins and outs are, and all that, that's really one of those ways that you can develop love as a concept. Now, I don't just mean romantic love, the same way we get to know our kids. No. That's my kid. They love SpaghettiOs. Give them the SpaghettiOs. No. What kind of Capri Suns? I know what kind of Capri Suns they want. They want the lemonade Capri Suns, and the straw better not fucking be flimsy. And, you know, it's just, but that striving to understand anything, but especially a person, is kind of this, the one sort of true love, if you will.
Okay, fair enough. I'll buy it. I can see the attraction, certainly. I think that last little bit would make a great adult contemporary rock song. I mean, leave out the Capri Sun bit. I think SpaghettiOs fit, but...
Who's that bald cocksucker from Smash Pumps?
Billy Corgan.
Billy Corgan. Yeah, I'll get him right on it.
Yeah.
What's so funny about peace, love, and understand it?
Still a rat in a cage. Whatever. I don't know.
The only redeeming grace that guy has is that if they ever make another Addams Family movie, he's a fucking lock for Uncle Fester, dude.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, no, unfortunately, he went out and found a couple of 20-something-year-olds, and he's going to be making music until he's 70.
That's not what I wanted to hear. That's not what I wanted to hear at all. Okay, so now that we've gone through how happiness has been defined in the past and how that kind of coalesces itself into more of a pragmatic modern interpretation, then since epistemology is what this is all about, how do we know what we know? How do we know if we're happy? How do we measure that happiness so that we can understand it better for ourselves, right? So, hedonism. How would you measure hedonism?
Notches in the bedpost.
Notches in the bedpost.
Well, notches in the bedpost versus notches in the HMO bill.
Keep in mind now, you are the same guy who has made two statements. There are no bad experiences, there are just experiences.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. You learn something from every experience. You know, you learn something, but sometimes what you learn is that shit burns and you can only take so many antibiotics before they lose their effectiveness.
You are also the guy who said one man's medical procedure is another man's Saturday night.
Goddamn right, and I still stand by it. Except for those people that do the sounding. You guys, I don't get it.
I don't want to know.
No, you really don't, but I'll show you a picture later.
Please don't. Please don't. But no, how do you measure these experiences, right? Like, say, for example, you wanted to go and it delighted you to go experience other cultures, right?
Right.
So you fly around the world, and you could measure that by the number of different foods you've tried or the number of different
countries. From a hedonism standpoint, I have visited this many continents. I have eaten this type of – I've eaten curry in 14,000 places.
And as you go to these places, right, as that number of experiences climbs, then so too, if not proportionally, then so too should your happiness.
Right. And that's kind of the thing that kind of got me bent around the axle on this topic, right?
Right.
Because there's very rarely a one-size-fits-all solution. And one of the things that I firmly believe is that as we age over time, not only as a function of time, but a function of the experiences during that time, what got you going before may not always keep you going, right? So there's kind of a varying, or not a varying, there's kind of a shift sometimes
right.
in those things. And that's where I think that the external stimulus has kind of removed our individual ability to take a moment and assess, because we're really not serving our own personal needs, right? We're trying to fit inside of a box, and once you fit yourself inside of that box, there's kind of a stigma attached to it. You kind of got to go with that flow. But that's the thing, right? So it might have been that doing everything to 110% was what really revved your motor in your 20s, right?
Right.
I'm going to go out and have all the sex, all the drugs, all the rock and roll, all the everything. Extreme. Exactly. I'm going to drink a fuck ton of Mountain Dew and eat Doritos like they're going out of style. And then all of a sudden, you know, you hit your mid-30s and, you know, not taking away all of the stupid stereotypes, right? Oh, well, you know, you hit your mid-30s and you had to buy a bigger belt and you just can't do those things now. Let's face it. In modern times, there are a lot of people who are in their mid-30s that can do everything that 20-year-olds can do. However, your experiences change, right? Your situations change. So, you know, now all of a sudden, oh, you know, maybe you've got a couple of kids. And what used to really pump your nads was going cave diving and all of this dangerous shit. All of a sudden, you have to think about others.
Right.
So, you know, there's lots of reasons why things might change.
But I feel like there's no longer a chance. There's no longer an opportunity. We've painted ourselves so specifically as members of some in-group.
Right.
And it just it keeps us locked in. So all of a sudden you find yourself doing things that you start to almost get depressed because this used to make me really happy.
Ah.
And why doesn't it anymore? And too many people go looking for that answer from someone else. Doc, I don't get it. You know, I used to go every Tuesday night, and I'd meet with this group of people, and we'd talk about the books we were reading.
Right.
And I loved it. I looked forward to this shit every week. But lately, it just doesn't put the lead in my pencil. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, then, of course, the doc, right, having been through the greatest post-grad studies for whatever their particular specialty is,
right,
is going to throw out all of the greatest hits. You know, well, have you, you know, really considered that perhaps maybe you've changed and that perhaps it's time to go out and find something new? Well, I mean, I guess. Well, you know, a lot of people your age, they start to experience, as they get a little bit older, they start to experience some depression, maybe some anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, what I can do is we can knock that edge off.
Here's a fistful of Prozac.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back up to the loading dock out back, and we're going to drop some shit on you.
Right.
And take that and then see if whatever that boring shit you were doing pumps your dads again. Oh, okay, great, Doc. Yeah, you know what? It doesn't bother me near as much going to book club now. Well, because you're in fucking neutral, bro. Nothing bothers you now. And that, so, but that's the thing, right? Regardless of whatever you're pushing for, right? Eventually, you have to reassess. Very rarely does what gets you there sustain you there.
And that's an important thing. And, you know, you know, as we were talking earlier, you'll see it a lot of times with the sexual depravity, right? Or excuse me, fetishism or whatever.
Yeah, as I say, I'd appreciate a change of terminology there.
You would. But
paraphilic disorders.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with that. You people out there know what I'm talking about. The freaky deaky people. The people.
Hey, guys, I'll be over around 9.
The people who want like a riding crop and a gag ball. You know what I mean?
Shit, dude, riding crop and a gag ball can describe the friggin' lady that works in the cubicle next to you these days, man.
It can be, but what I'm saying is that those people oftentimes, as it is with many different kinds of hedonism, they will pursue these just under the absolute extent of their imagination, and then when they run out of shit to invent...
Yeah, I thought you were surfing the internet. I finished.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They've done it all. They've seen it all. They've been spanked. They've used all 47 of the fun safe words they could think of. And they're just, they're done. Right? You know, they've had sex with, you know, one guy at a time, 5 guys at a time, 500 guys at a time. I think the record is 650. But I wish I were making that up.
But oh, no. I'm starting to think, okay, I wonder what the requirements for the record is. Does it have to be on tape?
This one, I only know this because it actually happened in Houston. There was, and somebody recorded it.
I'm guessing it was the NBA All-Star Game or something. Was there a Kardashian involved?
No, I don't remember who did it, but there was something called the Houston 650. I want to say it was like 20 years ago.
Nice.
Yeah, well.
Dude, if it was 20 years ago, it's been beat. Probably, well, probably by a German girl.
Damn it, they just want it more than we do.
Well, they're willing to work harder.
They're willing to work harder. Damn immigrants. It's your job!
Oh, God, now I've got to start a meme. They took our blue germ! Oh, I'll work on that when I get back. If I had any artistic at all.
So one of the other things is that whenever we talk about hedonism, maybe not just the number of experiences that you have, but maybe you can go, you know what, I did that, I don't like that. I did that, and that wasn't really for me. I mean, I'm glad I had the experience, but I didn't enjoy it.
So, well, like your mother always says, you got to try it before you can say you hate it.
Yeah, that's not actually true.
Are you calling my mother a liar?
I'm saying your mother was probably right about food, and that rule may not actually
exist. No, you don't get to apply life lessons like that to one category. It's got to be writ large.
I'm saying...
Do you want to rob that bank? Well, you know, I've never robbed a bank before, so I can't really say that it's bad.
Talk to Bonnie and Clyde. They'll tell you it was great. John Dillinger, right?
The other one, way number two, virtue. How do you measure virtue? How do you measure how virtuous you are? How do you put a number on that?
How many Hail Marys? Oh, no, wait. That's the opposite of how virtuous you are.
Well, now, as you bullshit, there are some numerical tenets caught in various scriptures, right? What is it? There are seven pillars of Islam to handle, and you should, pray the... Oh, God, I forget how many times it is, but there are a certain number of times, that there's only one God whose name is Allah and Muhammad right. is his prophet, right? And there will be call to prayers in fundamentalist Muslim countries where they still do that. This is different from, but you can find examples in Christian mythos as well, where, they say, you should tithe 10%.
Right.
Wow, okay,
That's very that boy. That's really a weird thing to come down so specific on when you left so many other things open ended.
Well, there's a lot of interpretation that goes along with any religion, but here the tithe thing is pretty straightforward. 10%. Oh well, that
easy. Well, so how do we want to pretty this up? Fuck your prettying it up. Put down 10%. Thou shalt tip your clergy.
I'm sure that people are going to quibble over this. Some people are going to say, no, it should be 10% of your gross because God shouldn't pay taxes. Some people are going to say it should be 10% of your net because I do pay taxes. And there are going to be people out there who say, take 10% of your money, throw it up in the air. Whatever God wants, he keeps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whatever comes back down, he wants you to enjoy that.
Exactly.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it into the bathroom and flush it down the toilet. It's going to do me just as good.
Those sewer alligators need walking around.
Mr. Hanky will grant all my prayers.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles need their pizza money.
Yeah, they got to have that pizza money.
For flush sure. a 20 for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, folks. But, no, one of the ways that will, based on what I see on social media, one of the ways that we measure our level of virtue is how many other people esteem us, how many other people regard us, how many other people agree with us, right? And you'll see this on, especially you'll see it on Twitter, you'll see people tweet things, and regardless of what the message is, they'll say, well, who's with me?
Yeah.
Or you'll hear them, or you'll see them type, pass it on.
Yes, queen!
Yes, queen! Or whatever, right? And... Maybe externalizing that internal value is not the best way to do that.
Well, but and again, I think that the whole idea of virtue is there's no difference in my mind between the hedonism and the virtue. It's just a different interpretation of what is a good idea versus not a good. Because at the end of the day, virtue is just something I believe in strongly.
Well, no. That's not always the case because we know that there are things that we will do as prescribed to us so we can adhere to those virtues, right?
Well, yes, but they're made up by somebody.
They are made up by somebody.
And I subscribe to that idea.
So as a quick and handy guide, for example, the Ten Commandments might be a set of virtues that you aspire to uphold. Right, you may not want to. Your neighbor's wife might be fine. You've been coveting right. the shit out of it, but you shouldn't.
But the Ten Commandments versus the Dirty Dozen, which is just 12 things that everyone should try before they die. That was written by some guy 20 years ago.
Again, never heard of the Dirty Dozen.
Well, and I'm making it up.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife, and number two on the Dirty Dozen is bend that bitch over.
Bend that bitch over.
They're both somebody's ideas of how to live your best life, and I choose to subscribe to one over the other.
But if you're taking that virtue, that sort of what would Jesus do, that sort of I'm committed to Christianity, you can't really, you may not want to give 10% of your wealth away, but it's very clearly written down in the book. Right, you may be a devout Muslim, and you're like, oh, man, goddamn, I got to make the Hajj. Really, yeah. I got to do that? That's a long trip.
I don't tip.
I don't tip. Well, no, because in Islam, it's the giving of alms, right? Which those countries are, as I understand it, kind enough to extract that from your check for you.
Exactly, yeah. So we could not help but notice, but you didn't put anything in the plate as they tapped the hilt of their sword.
Let us help refresh your memory. but no, so that's... How people regard you is one way you kind of view that virtue, because if I'm looking out at all these people and people go, oh, you're such a good Christian, oh, you're such a good person, oh, you're such a good liberal, or you're such a good conservative, or you're such a good, Keynesian economist, or whatever.
Well, and like we were talking about before the show, this is the notch that the I don't even own a TV yeah. crowd falls into, right? This well, look at me, the militant vegans and the all of these, right? The Marie Kondo, whatever folks that it all. It's all the same to me.
I named my kids Storm and Fern because I don't want to enforce gender roles on them. Let him pee standing up, lady. Just let him
did you,
pee
did you see the one the other day with the woman? I want to say she was in like Great Britain or Sweden or someplace, and she's like, her kid sleeps on the floor because she doesn't tell the kid when to go to bed or any of that. Well, you know, imagine if your partner locked you up every night when they were ready for you to go to sleep.
So, and let's go ahead and get through this real quick, because that lady esteems that as a virtue, and or at least she presents herself to. You should never believe anything you see on the internet is either real or sincere.
Oh, no, I understood. I thought it was funny, because I can imagine five or six people that I know in real life that would be like, you know what, she's got a good point.
Yeah.
I've been throwing my baby in a cage every night with no regard for whether or not that child wants to be there.
You know what? You'll know it's a baby cage if they can't lock it and there's cedar chips on the bottom, you know, with a little newspaper on top.
Dude, Taco was in a crib with a baby gate zip tied to the top of it. Because the little fucker would climb out of it.
Dude, you got to be creative sometimes.
Straight up baby cage.
Straight up baby cage. One of the other things, though, is you can actually measure yourself in your virtue. How close are you coming to living that life that you aspire to live, your aspirational goals, right? Are you really living your life in that what would Jesus do kind of way? You know, I got 9 out of 10 commandments, but one more, and I'm clean.
Yeah. Well, and so, like, do you have to do it forever, or do you just have to, like, meet it once and you check it off?
No. You got to do that shit every day.
I've had several neighbors, and very, very many of those neighbors, I did not covet their wife at all. However.
It's because you're a good person.
Oh, totally. Totally. It's because I have standards.
Okay, the second one I might quibble over.
I didn't say they were high standards. I just said I had standards.
Or, you know, again, you know, I don't have the 5% tie this week, but I'll catch you next week. I'm good for it. I'm good for it, right?
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for some salvation today.
Okay, yeah, fine, we'll go with that.
Sorry, all my money this week went to my pardon bid. I did not have a chance to pay for my salvation.
And again, we should go ahead and we should pause here real quick. If you are religious and you have a church and a faith that you attend, we're using tithing and alms as an example here, not to belittle it, but just to show you that, you know, there are oftentimes in text very clearly written rules. Look at me. I didn't murder anybody today.
Right. So, and I'm not belittling. However, I do think that if you're sitting out there in podcast land right now getting offended, if your faith makes you happy, practice your faith and don't worry about what two dipshits on the internet say about it.
But the point is that you can look at yourself measured against these scriptural parameters, if you will. And, well, I know that's a kind of a weird, distracted way or detached way to put it.
You got the little IKEA pencil and the scorecard.
Well, and you can't do it with all of them, but some of them you can.
Right.
Again, thou shalt not kill, that means zero. And now it does make right. other exceptions.
I tell myself every morning when I wake up, I am not a killer. Now, if I kill somebody that day, I wake up the next morning and go, I am not a killer.
Matter of fact, I know I'm not a killer. Every time I kill somebody, I go back to church, look up at God, and go, hey, why the mistake? You made a mistake.
I am truly weak, and I apologize. If we could go ahead and reset that bit.
Yeah, but the point is that measuring yourself against that, right? Because, for example, if the number of people who esteem you goes up, your happiness should go up. If the closer you adhere to your interpretation of those guidelines or your church's interpretation or your pastor or whatever those guidelines are, the closer you get to that, the happier you should be. To the extent that I don't think any religion is completely clearly spoken, that, you know, it has like, you know, 100 tenets, and once you check all those boxes, you ascend.
Congrats, you're going to heaven.
Yeah, exactly. Ta-da!
But I'm 22. Yeah, you did great, man.
Yeah, you finished in record time.
get him out of there before he fucks his good thing up.
Dude, didn't your parents talk to you about that whole teenage years? You were supposed to be having some fun before you really bought into the whole thing.
You were supposed to pace yourself.
I mean, we sent you to a room filled with Catholic schoolgirls in their little skirts. And somehow you managed to make it through, you poor bastard.
You know, and it took me years to get that joke. It really, really did.
Which joke?
Well, so, real quick, just a real quick detour, because we only got 5 minutes left, and we've still got two paths to peace, or two paths to happiness that we got to cover. When I was a kid, you know, I used to see on TV all the time, ooh, no Catholic schoolgirls. Oh, God, I love Catholic schoolgirls. Huh? And they would always show you these girls, like, in these uniforms.
Oh, right? Yes, the right? Uniform.
And I was like, there's nothing sexy about that uniform, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're cute, the girls, it's nice, but a blazer and a fucking plaid skirt, not doing it for me, right? I mean, so, and I said, I couldn't figure it out. Why is it always the Catholic schoolgirls? No. Even in the tick, right?
Uh-huh.
Batman Will is sitting there and he says something about, no, tell Antonio to bring his sister. She's Catholic.
Uh-huh.
That's not what that joke is at all. The whole point of that joke is that Catholics don't believe in contraception.
That one, yes.
That joke I get.
The whole Catholic schoolgirls is the whole repressed thing.
You think?
Yes. Did you ever watch the movie Footloose?
Yes.
And the pastor's daughter at the beginning of the movie?
Not Catholics.
It doesn't matter. It's the same concept.
Okay.
It's spoken like someone who never hung around Catholic schoolgirls.
Fair enough. We'll go with that.
To all my ladies at St. Teresa's, you know who you are. How you doing?
Okay, fuck it. So the third path to peace is, how do you measure peace? How do you measure whether or not you're at peace?
How do you put a price on peace?
Well, as it turns out, you measure it in nuclear missiles, and that cuts a few orders of magnitude off. But how do you measure that? How do you get the idea that you're in a peaceful state of mind? For example, some of the metrics you could use heart rate, blood pressure,
right?
Right, these biophysical or physiological.
Dude, my Apple Watch says I'm zen as fuck.
Exactly.
I got the EKG data to prove it.
One of my favorite jokes on Twitter of all time. My Fitbit says I just masturbated for 8 miles. I'm sorry, I love that joke. I'm doing a marathon next week. But no, is it the lack of possessions, right? Is that peace that you value? Is it, you know, as your number of possessions get lower, does that make you...
My things don't own me, yes.
My things don't own me. Like you said, I don't even own a TV.
Right.
I'm not perturbed by anything. I don't even have a social media account. I am very fond of the fact that I say, I don't have a fucking Facebook account. Never going to have one, my friend. Never.
Yeah, but see, you let Twitter touch you in your naughty bits all day, every day.
Yeah. Dude, I promise you, taking a break from this show...
What's the whole Gaffigan thing? It's all McDonald's. Maybe you don't eat at McDonald's. Maybe you watch Glee or you read Us Magazine.
It's all McDonald's. But no, I'm looking forward to taking a long break from Twitter. But no, that lack of possessions, you know, as that trends to zero, your happiness should be shooting towards infinity.
Should be, yeah.
All right. One of the other ways is... And I thought of this a little bit, but a lack of substance abuse problems or therapy.
Right, you're not dependent on anything.
Exactly,
right.
You're not crutching to get by. It, that's a pretty good metric for peace.
And I mean, and it's not just drugs and things like that. I mean, the thing is if you are able to exist on your own terms and not have to constantly be around people, that dependency can prop you up. You know, the ability to be truly kind of empty.
Yeah. So how do you measure that zero? And that's kind of the thing, right? Well, you know, I'm pretty mellow, actually. You know, I'm pretty chill. I don't have to get up and do three lines just to make it to work in the morning. Hell, I don't even drink coffee.
Right. And you know what? The weekend's coming up. It's a long weekend. And you know what? There ain't a bitch coming over. There ain't nothing. And I'm perfectly good with that.
And that is peaceful. But are you really getting a whole lot of living out of your life that way?
Well, and again, because things change over time, it's very possible to have, you know, the ability to go, you know what? All I really want right now is to be left alone. Last year sometime, I don't remember when it was, because the whole thing is blurred together, I randomly got up and took 3 days and drove to the mountains in Colorado.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just zenned out. I'm doing it again in a couple of weeks. I'm going to the beach and spending a week or two on the beach. And it's like, yeah, just disconnect, unplug. It's not how I always want to be. But you get away from all the other shit in your life, and you have an opportunity to actually put some things in perspective.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. A little bit of that is okay, but for me anyway, that's not how I find happiness. I like a little bit of it, especially the no possessions thing, because I'm not the kind of guy who really wants to be burdened by stuff.
Sure.
But there we are, just the same. Even I own some shit. And the last one, of course, is knowledge, because it is so peculiar. We have some pretty good ways to measure knowledge, right? You might measure it in the number of degrees or the kind of degrees people have, you know, with bachelor's, master's, PhD. Well, you know, he's got his bachelor's in physics, and he's got a minor in math, and, you know, and he's got his master's in underwater basket weaving or whatever it is. And, you know, that took this many hours of college right. education, including this many hours of lab. And he's also published all these papers. Have you seen the guy's curriculum vitae? He's published left and right, left right. and right, left and right. and, you know, or he's a Jeopardy champion. You walk around and he just right. knows all the
He's
trivia.
Ken Jennings.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is basically just nerdy Cliff Clavin.
He's the Cliff Clavin you like. And I got to be honest with you, find Cliff Clavin much more personable.
Oh, yeah. Cliff Clavin gets laid. Ken Jennings does not get laid.
Cliff Clavin was living with his mama and still going to get here.
Oh, yeah. He, you know, mom knows the deal if the sock's on the door.
But I think what's really, really interesting about this whole knowledge thing is that it kind of imparts to you, right? Because if you're so well learned and you're so well studied, you become very resistant to surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, and not even necessarily in any kind of peaceful way, just in kind of I can't be fazed kind of way.
Right. Well, and that's very selective though, right? Because I know for me, if I was considered the expert in something, mm-hmm. then there would constantly be a little bit of a fear of, okay, someone's going to come up with something that I don't know the answer to. And by God, someone else who's never published anything. I've written more than Stephen King. And some guy who's never written a damn thing is going to answer that question to make me look like a complete sham. So for me, I would find that distressing as hell. But obviously, there are people that you know, covet that position.
Yeah, and you know what? I get it. It's nice going, no, I know how that works. No, I know how that works.
Right.
No, I know how that works. No, that doesn't work like that. That's wrong. No.
Because we all love those people. We know how well they fit in and are appreciated by their peers.
Yeah. They won't always like you for it, I promise you, but they will call you.
And that's why they never got invited to those kind of parties.
So that's it, right? Well, we start, you know, with the ancient beginnings of what happiness is. Then we go ahead and we move you on through the four kinds of paths to happiness that we really, really have now. And the ways that you can sort of measure whether or not you're happy while you're on those paths. However, that doesn't really answer the whole thing, nor is it really fully the thrust of the show. Because what you should do, if you have time, is you should go ahead and take a different emotion, a different goal, a different anything, and put it through its epistemological paces. Start with the metaphysics of the thing. What does it do? What is it? Or not what does it do, but what is it? What is this thing that I'm trying to be? What is happiness? What is anger? What is a Toyota Corolla?
Right. Well, and how does this thing serve my goal? And is my goal, if you can't just say, okay, my goal is to be happy.
Oh, no, you can.
Well, I mean, you could say it all day, alone, but yeah. My goal is to be happy, and how I get there is...
Right. If I want to be happy, I need to understand what happiness is, how it's been, you know, spelled out over time, and what version of that happiness do I want.
Right. And you, for me, you look at the things that make you happy in the short term, right? The instantaneous things. Oh, I really enjoyed that. That was a pleasant experience. Okay, so how can those things be lined up, and what are they telling you about what it takes to make you happy?
Yeah, or anything for that matter. And that's kind of the deal, because, you know, like I said, we did this because because we know that some of you are going through a rough time, and we are not a self-help show. We are not a mindfulness show. We are not a woo show, right? We are
no, we are not a woo show whatsoever. Although I'm going to go Google woo show very quickly.
The point is that I'm not trying to get you to hug trees or clutch crystals or do whatever.
We're not trying to get you to do any of that. Yeah. If that's what you decide that you want to go do, then fucking straight on till morning, damn it. Enjoy the shit out of it.
Yeah, and if that's your thing, fine. But we do know that as this lockdown, you know, now that the vaccines are rolling out, this lockdown is kind of coming to a close.
That's the hope, yeah.
And, of course, change is always painful. And as we've shifted out of our normal lives into this life of isolation and lockdown, we're going to shift out of that. And right now, you know, with the social unrest that we've had literally all year.
Right.
You know, we have to shift back to that new normal or to that new old normal.
Right.
Where we actually used to go out and get along in the world and try to find a way to be.
Yeah, at some point in the near future, you're going to have to actually venture out into the world again, and there's going to be other people there.
And you're going to need to know how to be happy when you do it.
And that's the thing. To be the best, you know, the best balance of the things that make you happy. Let's face it, no one can be happy all the time. I think I've got a Burger King crown somewhere that says that.
Yes, I remember that.
You remember because like Burger King had like those weird, depressing purple and blue.
Yeah, crowns. Yeah. Sometimes it's okay to be upset and. You know, the all that kind of thing. Sometimes we don't always get it our way, which I thought was ironic. But, no, I mean, the thing is you can't be happy all the time, but the goal here is to at least not get trapped into the fact that you can't be happy again.
And one other thing before we go, just real quick. It's no secret that I'm not a huge fan of altruism. And when I say that, I mean I'm not a huge fan of the idea that the only real good in the world is altruism, right? There is a lot to be enjoyed there's a lot to be improved in the world by improving yourself and making yourself happy. So don't get too wrapped up in that, you know, because let's face it, there's a fresh flock of teenagers and early 20ers who are like, I'm going to go out and save the world. Guess what? World's still not saved.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Hey, I hope that someday one of them does. I think that would be awesome. I think the whole world would kind of collectively stop and go, what the fuck?
That was neat.
And that would be interesting as hell to me, right? Given what we've seen in the last year, the ability for the whole world to stop and hold its breath for a moment has never been more prevalent. So I think we'll just continue to see it happen more often, but it would be nice to happen one time for something good, right?
Wouldn't that be
just
great?
Just one time. That would be awesome.
That would be great.
But no, you know, it's all the sporting goods and beer commercial stuff. Take life by the horns, do all this stuff. It's almost time to start thinking about those things again. And that's kind of the point here is as things kind of start winding down, you know, maybe you've been doing the same thing nonstop because it made you happy once. You know, it's time to reevaluate. Is it still making you happy? Could you be happier? Is there something that would? But if you keep doing the same thing over and over again.
When you come out of your lockdown normal, are you going back to the normal you knew? Or are you going to establish for yourself a new normal?
Have you taken this time? You know, and we've had episodes where we've talked about the things that are being done.
What
and
the how fuck we're did spending you people time, doing right. your time? Yeah.
You know, have you taken this time to reflect a little bit and to maybe understand that, you know, you got sunk into a rut, and the things that you were doing were just kind of happening automatically.
Right.
You know, so now, you know, with this time that you've had, hopefully there's the opportunity to bring some new things to the table and perhaps grow, however you grow. You know, whether it's, you know, I've been really interested in reading up on the political stuff that's going on. You know, all of the local politics lately have made me start wanting to learn a lot more about our government and the history of it.
Yeah.
Apparently, a lot of you motherfuckers became constitutional experts in the last few months.
Yeah, not so much.
You know, so if you want to take that out and expand your mind and learn some things, that's great. You know, if you're waiting at home chomping at the bit to be able to go out and actually meet other people in the flesh again, you know, that opportunity is hopefully not too far off either. So whatever it is, and if you're not sure, experiment. Try things out. And if you happen to try out sounding, take some pictures and send them to the rat.
No, please do not. Do not show me pictures of your pierced choke. Do not show me the big silver speed bump that you put through your labia.
Oh, no, not pierced. Impaled.
Not better.
Oh, I'm just saying, there's a distinction. You must understand. Words mean things.
Not to me.
Well, you know, guys, we are approaching the 10-minute after mark, so this is normally the time where I will come back and say I'm still Thunderstow and he's still the Wiggle Rat, and we'll see you next week. We ain't going to see you next week, folks. This is going to be the end of Season 5.
Yeah, we're going to cut Season 5 just a little bit short, mostly because I've got a lot going on right now, and it's kind of getting harder for me to juggle a show like this every week.
And it's been a long year, let's face it. It's been a long, strange trip this year, and so we are going to take some time, a little hiatus, recover, get the spit and vinegar back.
Go down in the basement, run in the little rat wheel for a little while.
Yeah, you know, just let things marinate and work things out. So hopefully when we come back, everyone will be in a better position, and everyone will be out flexing those muscles that they forgot how to use. But until then, good luck to you.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Barra. Hi, Araja. Hi, Renhammer. Who else have we not shouted out to this? Hi, Zigram.
We haven't shouted out at all, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and, you know, we really should do that.
And quite frankly, guys, if you've listened to more than one episode of this show, just know that we appreciate it.
We do.
You know, we don't do this because we think there are millions of you out there listening. Let's face it, there's always been a selfish tick on this to do it. But, you know, we do get feedback and from the folks that give it. We do appreciate it.
Yeah.
So just know that we've had fun doing this, and there's like a 90% chance we'll be back for Season 6.
Oh, yeah.
Probably late spring, early summer.
As long as you don't join a cult.
Well, I'm already in two cults, and I've managed to get this far, so...
Okay.
I mean, if I join a cult that's against me having one night a week to do a show...
Yeah, cults aren't as flexible as you think they are.
That's more like marriage.
Marriage is a cult of one.
There it is. All right, guys, that's going to do it for Season 5. We appreciate the hell out of you listening, and we will be back whenever to start Season 6. Until then, I'm still Thundersnow.
And I'm still the Wiggle Rat.
Peace.